Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Our special guest is our good friend Dan Pink. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He's a contributing editor at Fast Company Magazine, which, as I've told you, is an outstanding magazine that I recommend to you. I'm a subscriber, and I recommend that you do. You become one as well. From 95 to 97, Dan was the chief speechwriter to Vice President Al Gore. In that position, he was the lead writer in all of the Vice President's major domestic speeches. He also was a member of the Vice President's 96 debate preparation team and co-wrote and co-produced A Brief History of the Vice Presidency. He, before working at the White House, he served two years as speechwriter and special assistant to U.S. Secretary of Labor Robert Reich. And Dan received his B.A. degree from Northwestern University, where he was elected to Phi Beta Kappa. He also received his law degree, his J.D. from Yale University Law School. And but to our pleasure, he's never practiced a day as a lawyer. At least not as of the last time I talked to him. Dan, anything new there?
No.
Still
no.
Not practicing.
Fortunately, my life has not turned that ugly yet.
Welcome to the show, Dan.
Well, thanks for having me. Good morning.
It's good to have you back. What's happening what new is happening in the world of free agency?
Well, there are all kinds of things happening, new happening in the world of free agency. One of the most interesting is a veritable race on the web of a bunch of new companies that are trying to provide services for free agents. Both services directly and also establishing some kind of web presence so that those who are seeking to hire free agents can find free agents, and free agents who are seeking to be hired can find the right buyers. So there are a whole bunch of really interesting new web-based business models out there that have really flowered in only the last couple of months.
Now, you coined the term free agents.
I don't know if I really coined it.
You get to define it.
Kurt Flood coined it.
Who?
Kurt Flood, the baseball player.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I see what you mean. No, I agree with you. You know, I remember that. But from a standpoint of, let me put it this way. You coined the new application. I'll put it that way. So you get to define it, but I think you and I may have a little bit of a different definition. But tell us what your definition of a free agent in terms of Free Agent Nation is.
Well, I've got a fairly loose definition, and generally what I say is a free agent is someone who works untethered from a large organization. And that could be someone who is self-employed, someone who is a freelancer, someone who is an independent contractor, someone who is a micro entrepreneur, someone who has a home-based business, someone who has a two- or three-person small business.
Okay, good.
So it's a fairly flexible organization. About 30 years ago, a Supreme Court justice said of obscenity, he said, "I know it when I see it." And so I feel the same way about free agents. I know it when I see it.
Well, see, I was thinking that you maybe had a little more narrow definition than that, but I'm glad to see that you have broadened, your definition is broader, because I agree with you on that. I probably take it maybe a little bit further but than you do, but I do think that a free agent is not just an independent contractor, as you say, somebody who has a small business. One of the things I wonder, before we get too far into the free agency, I want you to report to us a little bit on the Soho Summit. You went out to San Diego to the Soho Summit last month, didn't you?
Right. I did. Soho, as most of your listeners probably know, is an acronym for Small Office, Home Office. And this was a summit of people who work on these issues, who write about these issues, who are establishing companies to serve these this workforce. And for 2 days in Carlsbad, California, a number of these people got together and talked about what makes this workforce tick, what are the sorts of challenges in their lives, what kinds of new technologies do they need. And it was a fascinating conversation. The maestro for all of this was Terry Launier of Working Solo.
Mm-hmm.
There were some really great panelists and speakers there, including Guy Kawasaki, who just wrote a book called Rules for Revolutionaries, Seth Godin, who just wrote a book called Permission Marketing.
Yep, he's been on the show before.
Yeah, Beverly. I mean, basically, your entire roster of guests was there, Jim. Beverly Williams.
Three of them at least.
Yeah.
Of course, Seth's only been on once or twice, I think, but you've been on several times, and Beverly's been with us many, many times.
Uh-huh.
Beverly Williams, and you guys, I know, are acquaintances, and I'm glad you guys finally got to meet face-to-face out there.
Yeah.
But it was... what do you think the plans are?
There was a small, you think of it as a Small Business Advocate West.
Yeah, exactly. What about, what do you think is going to come from that summit? What result will come from that summit on behalf of SOHO?
Well, this was the first SOHO summit. So I imagine that Terry Lanier, who's the maestro of all this, will she plans on making this an annual event. And I think what it does is it really establishes SOHO, small office, home office, free agents, small-based, home-based businesses, micro-entrepreneurs, as a force to be reckoned with in American commerce. And I think, you know, like a lot of these conferences, it'll grow and grow and grow and grow. And it just becomes a place for people who care about these issues to meet every year and for people who are trying to learn a little bit more to come out and meet some folks who really think a lot about these issues.
All right, thank you for giving us that report, because I know you were one of the important panelists out there and very involved in that, and I wanted to hear some of your thoughts on that.
Well, my computer crashed before my presentation.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh.
So I had to madly scribble down my presentation on a piece of of hotel index cards. It all worked out fine.
Well, but that was no hill for a climber, Dan, and you're a climber. Hey, let's talk. Oh, by the way, I happen to know that you've got an anniversary coming up.
I do.
This Sunday.
I actually have multiple anniversaries coming up because my wedding anniversary is July 2nd.
And all the ladies out there are saying, which is the most important one?
Right, but probably the least interesting for your listeners. So I'll tell you about the other anniversary, although I'm happy to spend the rest of the hour talking about my beautiful wife. The other anniversary is 2 years ago on Independence Day, 1997, I myself became a free agent. And for the last 2 years, I have been working as a free agent, which is significant in and of itself. But more important, I've been spending the entire last 2 years traveling around the country talking to free agents.
I want to talk about that some more in a second. And congratulations on your anniversary, by the way.
Thank you.
And I have a friend who defines what you and I do as living by our wits.
That's great.
We got to take a quick break, folks. It's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Dan Pink is our special guest. 888-822-8255. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 24 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. I appreciate your business. And I appreciate our special guest being with us today. His name is Dan Pink. He's a good friend. He's a member of the Small Business Advocate Brain Trust. He is a contributing editor to Fast Company magazine. He is the guy who you've heard me speak of many times. You've heard me reference him with other guests when I've said, you know, when I've talked about Dan Pink and his Free Agent Nation. Dan, one of the things that I want you to tell us about is in the last 2 years, since you've been wandering around doing the research on, and I use that term wandering around in the best possible way, by the way. I know you have been traveling a lot, and sometimes wandering is a good way to do it.
Sure.
But you've been doing a lot of research on this. I want you to talk about some of the things that you found, some of the surprises. What were the good, the bad, and the ugly of your research so far?
Well, you're right. I have been traveling and wandering around the country for the last year and a half. First for a magazine article I did for Fast Company, and now for a book that I'm writing, which I'm finishing up right now, and which should be out next year. Both the book and the article the tentative title of the book is Free Agent Nation. The article is what's called Free Agent Nation, and a lot of this material is on my website, which is also www.freeagentnation.com. So I've been traveling around the country for the last, as you said, the last little while, interviewing free agents from all walks of life. And I guess the most telling change I've noticed over the last 2 years is how mainstream this is becoming.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started writing about this, free agency was a little bit of an exotic choice that some people made. And certainly that was true 5 years earlier, 10 years earlier. And then it gradually became more of a fine thing for people to do. And I think more and more right now, at this moment in time, free agency, being a free agent, being a small entrepreneur, is really something that individuals are celebrating. It's gone from being exotic to mainstream to being something that's really prized and valued by individuals and by society writ larger. I think in many ways it's free agents have become a kind of aspiration in the American workforce. Just like the organization man 40 years ago really embodied work in America at that time, today I think the free agent embodies work in America today, both as a reality and as an aspiration?
Well, you know, and I've been saying this for some time now, working for a major corporation, being an employee of a major corporation, is pretty much a 20th century phenomenon.
Right, exactly.
And I've also been saying, as you have been, that more and more Americans are reverting back to our roots, to our original elements that brought us over to this country to start with, and that's independence.
Sure. No, I think that 10 years from now, 15 years from now, we might look back on the period, say, after the Depression until about the late 1980s as a real aberration in American life, where the fundamental unit in society were large institutions, whether it was big unions, big government,
right,
big companies. And now I think that in the past, and I think increasingly in the future, is that the fundamental units might be much, much smaller.
Were you surprised to find that? When you found how culture was accepting this, were you surprised that it hadn't already been accepted, or were you surprised that it was being accepted?
Probably a mix of both. What's been interesting, when I decided to do what I am doing, to go out on my own, there were a number of people in my former world of politics who thought I was insane.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, there were still people who thought that I was, who felt, I think, a tinge of, or who said that they felt a tinge of envy, saying that they wish they could be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's happened is that it's really become much more accepted, much more mainstream. I mean, an example would be what's happening with offices,
mm-hmm,
and home offices. I work out at the third floor of my house. I have a separate office up here on the third floor with separate phone lines and everything. And not too long ago, if you worked out of your home, you really disguised that fact. So you would be talking on the phone, and the person you were talking to would say, "Hey, is that a dog in there?" And you would have to say, "What dog? I don't hear a dog." Well, and then
it's a bad call.
Yeah, must be the phone line. And then, I think the second stage was you'd be on the phone in your home office. We can pick this up after the break.
You heard the music. You're picking up. Good job there, Dan. Folks, we've got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to get Dan to tell us some more about the good, the bad, and the ugly of being a free agent in America today. It's 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Dan Pink is our special guest. 888-822-8255. Come on back. We'll be here. Welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Dan Pink is our special guest. He's the author of the upcoming book, Free Agent Nation. And folks, and by the way, Dan, you've got a couple of articles coming up in the new Fast Company. You got a couple of articles coming up, haven't you?
Yes, I do. They'll be out in the September issue, which will be on newsstands. And it'll take a few more weeks for it to get on the newsstands.
Right.
I've got a story, two stories. One is about, an interview with a guy named Nathan Shedroff, who is the chief creative officer at a web design studio in San Francisco called Vivid Studios. And it's about how personal websites and the convergence between the explosion of the web and the increasing prevalence of people thinking of themselves as their own personal brand. Tom
mm-hmm.
Peters did a big story for Fast Company a while back called The Brand Called You.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about what happens when the brand called you goes to the World Wide Web. And it's about some rules and some guidance for designing your personal website. And one of the interesting things about that is that the new prestige domain name today is your own name.
Right.
So jimblassingame.com
mm-hmm.
or danpink.com or beverlywilliams.com. So you have more and more people, free agents, small business people, who are registering their own name as a domain.
Right.
And again, that goes to something you were saying before about how this is a kind of reversion to the past, because in the past, a lot of small shops would often have their owner's name on it.
Yep. And John Jones and Sons or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. There's another article, though. You've got another.
Right, and I also have an article about we're coming up on the 30th anniversary of a book called What Color Is Your Parachute?
The 30th anniversary.
Isn't that amazing?
I didn't realize that. That does amaze me.
That book has been around for 30 years. It's a remarkable, remarkable success story in publishing. And the guy who wrote it is 71 years old now, Dick Bowles, who lives out in Northern California. And we're talking about, the piece talks a little bit about his views on how careers have changed, how job hunting has changed.
Well, you couldn't do your book without him, could you?
Well, it's a remarkable book, and its endurance is really amazing. And the Library of Congress did a survey of scholars and readers about the 25 books that have influenced people's lives over the last century. And on that list were things like the Bible, Catcher in the Rye, The Great Gatsby, I mean, all these classic works of literature, and What Color Is Your Parachute?
I'll be darned. Well, I'm looking forward to that. And of course, what we'll have to do is get you back on in sometime in the next couple of months to talk to us some more about that. Folks, that's in the September issue of Fast Company. Check it out. Let's go back, Dan, and talk about some of the good, the bad, and the ugly that you found. What are some of the other things that you've found since you've been traveling around researching Fast Company?
Well, as I was saying, I mean, I think you see this transition in public acceptance, and you know, as I was saying before the break, you see it a little bit in offices, where if you worked out of your home office before, you would try to disguise that.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone said to you, "Hey, is that a dog barking?"
Mm-hmm.
You would say, "Oh, it must be something on the line. What dog? I don't hear anything.
Mm-hmm.
Can I call you right back?"
Mm-hmm.
Then you know the next stage was you'd be on the phone, and someone would say, "Is that a dog barking?" And you might say, "Yeah, that's my dog. I'm
walking George.
Home."
That's mm-hmm. George.
And right, that's Fido. And you know, no big deal. Well, now I think we've actually entered a third stage where the free agent, the small entrepreneur, will be on the phone with someone at a big company and will say, "Hey, you hear that? That's my dog. That's
well,
my
know,
dog barking in the background."
That's happened on the show before. I have a lot of folks who are on my show who are your free agents.
Uh-huh.
And Azriella Jaffe was just on the show in the last hour, and she's a classic example of that. And you know, I'll hear them. They'll be on the show, and they'll be on their. I'll be hearing birds in the background. And I'll say, "Are you on your deck?"
Uh-huh.
And they'll say, "Of course I am," you know, or the dog will bark, or before we go on the show, they'll say, "Now, in that hour, I may have a 5-year-old running around here."
Right.
You know, is that going to bother you? And I said, "No, my audience has 5-year-olds too."
Exactly.
And so it's okay. And occasionally we get the 5-year-old on and we say hello to the 5-year-old.
That's funny, yeah.
It's real world.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so now I think people are, you know, like your earlier guest, I mean, are really, instead of disguising it and then instead of simply revealing it, I think people are celebrating it.
See, I went through that. See, I've lived through that because I had a home office over 20 years ago, and
uh-huh.
then I went back into corporate life to having a corporate office, and then I went back 10 years ago. I just had my 10th anniversary of my company, and I started out back in my home, and I had clients who were very uncomfortable with that. They did not like it, and they were so proud when I went downtown with it and had an office downtown.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting to see their reaction to that. What are some of the worst parts of what are some of the bad things that you found?
There are a few things. I mean, I'm generally pretty bullish on free agency. I think it's generally good for the country. I think it's generally good for many individuals. I mean, it's not perfect for everybody, but there are some downsides. One of them is that our legal regime, our tax regime, many of the kind of fundamental structures in society are really ill-equipped to deal with this.
Yes.
For instance, we have this tradition in this country that is nothing. It really is a tradition. There's no economic or moral logic behind it that we get our health insurance through something called a job.
Mm-hmm.
And as fewer of us have traditional jobs, what happens to health insurance? That's a big challenge for people. Same is true with certain tax issues.
Yeah. Stand by, Dan. We're going to have to take a quick break. I want to talk about some of the legal aspects of free agency. Zoning is another one that we need to
Absolutely.
Talk about. When we come back, folks, 39 after the hour, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Dan Pink is our special guest, and I appreciate your business. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 44 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Dan Pink is our special guest, and our phone number is 888-822-8255, 1-888-822-8255, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. And when you're noodling around on my site and you go to my Brain Trust section, you will see the name Dan Pink there. And when you click on that, it'll take you to his bio, which will also take you to his links. But if you'd like to go directly to him right now, Dan, give us your addresses.
My website is www.freeagentnation. That's one smushed together word.
And there's a dot in there, folks. www.
Right, www.freeagentnation.com.
All spelled out, all one word, kind of like the way
Small Business Advocate.
Exactly. Check that out, folks. It's a good website. I went back there over the weekend, by the way, Dan, and it's really looking good.
Great, thanks.
We were talking about some of the legal aspects, some of the politics of free agency, and one of the last things that I had mentioned as we took the break was this zoning situation. I got an email from a guy out in Utah the other day, and he lives in a community where there are 1,000 home-based businesses. He was able to identify 1,000 home-based businesses. He lives on a 2-acre tract of land, no, 3-acre tract of land, and the city government was not allowing him to have his business in his home because he had 2 employees. Now, here he is on a 3-acre tract of land, and they wouldn't let him have, I mean, that's you can run a cattle herd on 3 acres almost. I mean, why wouldn't they? I mean, and he took him. He went down and he asked me what he should do, and I gave him some advice. He went down there. He said it made sense to him. He made his plea, and they still rejected him.
Wow,
that's got to change, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, among the many ways in which certain institutions, particularly law and policy, haven't caught up are local ordinances for zoning. I mean, it's not as if a lot of these zoning laws have no purpose behind them, but their purpose, the world has moved well beyond their purpose. So I work out of the 3rd floor of my house. I actually don't know what the statute is here in Washington, D.C. I mean, I could be violating the law for all I know, and if the mayor...
Well, as long as you're not hanging a sign out front in your car, you don't have a truck out there with all your stuff.
Well, I actually think that I am... I mean, and my neighbors agree that I'm fundamentally good for this neighborhood.
Yeah.
Good for... First of all, I'm around in the neighborhood during the day. I mean, in the days of the organization, man, neighborhoods like this would empty out during the day. They looked like, you know, a neutron bomb hit. Mm-hmm. It left the building standing and got rid of all the people.
Right.
And now I'm around during the day, so when kids are walking to and from school, there are plenty of people in my neighborhood who work out of their house, so there are more adults around during the day. I'm not clogging up the highways. I'm not polluting with my car. You know, it's really benevolent. Now, and if I were running a midnight welding operation in my backyard, that might be a problem. I can see the city authorities getting upset about that.
Or if you had a lot of deliveries coming and going.
I had a lot of deliveries, but, you know, the truth is, you know, a lot, you know, so many middle-class people are so time-starved that they are now getting a lot of deliveries anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, they're ordering their groceries online. They're ordering their books online. They're ordering all sorts of things and from catalogs and online.
And those changes in the culture are what's going to make the complaint that cities have about not being able to have deliveries to your home-based business. They're going to make those things moot, aren't they?
I mean, probably. Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, but a lot of these zoning rules and regulations really don't make sense. And in some jurisdictions, it's a misdemeanor to work out of your house, even if you're, you know, as I am, I'm a writer. I have, you know, make very little noise or pollution, and I'm around during the day. So I would say that on balance, I'm a plus for our neighborhood. I mean, the city should be paying me.
let's go back. Let's talk a little bit more, I should say, about the politics. You mentioned, you brought something up a minute ago about healthcare. How for most of this century, we've received our healthcare from something, as you said, from something called a job. And I suspect that you and I might have a little bit of a different opinion about how we should get that. Why don't you go ahead and talk to us about how you think you would solve that?
Well, I mean, I actually think that, I don't think that there should be a single one-size-fits-all solution. I think there should be a lot of options out there for people to choose from. And one of the interesting things about free agents in a political sense is that they really defy a lot of the standard political groupings. For instance, mm-hmm. Free agents would go for, many free agents have gone and will continue to go for medical savings accounts, which in the world of politics are something, you know, from the right.
Right.
And by the same token, there are plenty of people who would go for something like universal health insurance, essentially extending Medicare to the rest of the population.
Right.
And, you know, either one of those would work for me. I want individuals to have a choice about what's best for them. And that's if I were president, I would have 2 criteria. Let individuals make the decisions that are best for them, and also let's make sure that you know, everyone has a basic floor of coverage.
Well, my thoughts are that let the marketplace solve those problems.
Uh-huh.
I don't want the government to solve those problems.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't think the government can, I mean, when I hear universal coverage, that makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck, because that means the government is running it. And you and I, now I think you and I probably may agree on this, anything the government runs, they're gonna mess up.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd go that far. I think Medicare has been a success, and Medicare is essentially a universal health insurance plan for people 65 and over.
But isn't it out of money?
Well, it's not out of money yet.
Well, it's heading in that direction.
Yeah.
I'm just saying we need to revert. What I'm saying is if we believe in the free agent nation, we've got to believe in the marketplace, not the government.
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
I think you can't have one without the other.
I generally agree with that. I mean, I think what the government can do is...
Stand by. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Stand by. We've got to take a quick break. Folks, it's 50 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. We'll be right back. We're back. 24 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thank you very much for joining us. Dan Pink is our special guest. And we're talking about something he calls Free Agent Nation. And he not only calls it that, he wrote an article about it. It was in Fast Company magazine. And he is writing a book that's probably going to be called Free Agent Nation. And, Dan, I can't wait to get my hands on it. I'm disappointed it's not coming out until next year. What's the problem?
Well,
you get to work.
I'm finishing it up right now, and the way the publishing world works, it usually takes several months between the time that a manuscript is finished and the production and marketing and distribution of the book.
Can you say who the publisher is going to be?
Oh, sure. The publisher is Warner Books.
Warner Books?
Yeah.
Okay, good. I'm looking forward to it. What do you think, first quarter?
I'm not sure yet.
Okay.
It's ultimately their decision.
And we'll be waiting
to go on the record trying to speed up their timetable as much as possible.
We'll be waiting with bated breath.
Yeah.
For it. Dan, I want to put you on the spot a little bit. Folks,
all right.
as many of you know, you've heard me say this before, Dan was the former chief speechwriter for Vice President Al Gore, who is the surely the inevitable Democratic nominee for the next presidential election. Now, Dan, I want you to tell us a little bit about him. I mean, tell us, what do you think about his chance? What his chances are?
Well, I think that Al Gore will be a very good president if he's elected. As for his, I think any citizen can be very, very secure that there'll be a man in the Oval Office who is principled and smart and who will make decisions in the best interest of the country. As for his chances, who knows? I mean, this election is not for another 16 or 17 months, and who knows what could happen in that time?
There's a lot. There are a lot of
Just think about in the last 6 or 7 months. You know, we've had a president impeached and American fighting men and women in a war in Europe.
Well, look what happened to George Bush.
Sure.
I mean, he couldn't lose probably 18 months before the election, and then he was overwhelmingly defeated, or maybe not overwhelmingly, but he did lose. And as you say, a lot of things can happen. But I know you're not advising him anymore, and I'm assuming you did advise him when you were his chief speechwriter.
Uh-huh.
But what would you tell him now if you could talk to him about campaigning?
Buy my book. No, I would tell him... about campaigning, you know, I actually think there's way too much emphasis in the media placed on is Al Gore boring, is Al Gore stiff, all that sort of stuff. My advice for Al Gore would be talk about the future, talk about the things that people really care about, that they talk about around their kitchen tables, about the future of work, about health insurance, about taxes, about the things that really matter in people's lives. Forget about endorsements from other politicians. Forget about endorsements from labor unions or newspapers.
Yep.
Talk about what people care about, and don't talk about them in a way, and devise answers in a way that are not ideological or partisan. That simply are results oriented and affect people's lives.
You know, when I think he gets into trouble is when he tries to be something he's not supposed to be. He's not wasn't meant to be. When he tries to be loud and you know, when he tries to act like he thinks other people think he should act.
Yeah.
I think that's when he gets into trouble.
Yeah, and after the last 8 years, I'm not sure that a boring president is such a bad thing.
Hey, listen, I know it, and see that's how I feel when people start knocking Steve Forbes. I mean, I'm not saying he's my candidate, but I'm just saying, you know, I could use a boring president for a little while. Dan, we've got to wrap it up for this hour. As always, you did a great job. Looking forward to having you back again real soon. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, see you later. Folks, that's Dan Pink. Look for his book. It'll be out sometime next year, Free Agent Nation. And look for his articles coming up in the upcoming Fast Company magazine. Got to wrap it up for this hour. Before I go, I want to thank my heroes. small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember today, be guilty of committing a random act of kindness. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. Special guest is our very...
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.